Words and Culture. You can learn more Cree at wordsandculture.ca, where you can also check out other Indigenous languages as well. I'm your host, Michael Hutchinson. Be well, stay smiling.
Words and Culture is made possible with funding from SiriusXM through the Community Radio Fund of Canada. Words and Culture is produced by Kim Wheeler. Kaylin Belair is our audio engineer and editor.
Onigiwahi.
Gigawabamin. Soko seni denit e. Ninen yuji hina.
Ekose.
Kakuhutau. We'll see you again.
You're listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Do you want to know about up-and-coming artists, albums, and, well, I have the perfect show for you. Come hang out with me at Raccoon City every Tuesday from 12 to 1. Hope to see you there.
And Davalawan, I'm Sabrina Spencer with A Journey Continues, highlighting local stories that matter to you. May 5th is recognized as Red Dress Day, and the Terrace Tears to Hope Society will be hosting their annual Red Dress Walk. Denise Hayfrid, the Executive Assistant to Tears to Hope Society, spoke with CFNR about the event.
My name is Denise Hayfrid, and I'm the Executive Assistant of the Tears to Hope Society.
Every year, the Tears to Hope Society, they host a Red Dress Walk, which is annually on May 5th.
That's correct. Red Dress Day falls on May 5th every year, and we've been doing the walk since. And this year, we are doing the same. We are meeting at the RCMP station on Sunday at 12:15 and walking to George Little Park, where there will be some speakers and there'll be some drumming and all together people gathering to remember and honor their loved ones that have been missing or murdered.
And do you find that the Terrace event tends to be a little bit bigger every year? Obviously, we're right along the Highway of Tears.
The last few years, it seems to be getting bigger and bigger. If February 14th is any indication, that was our biggest turnout for a walk to commemorate our missing and murdered loved ones. We had about 150 people show up to that. And what was really nice that I noticed was while we were walking to the arena, I noticed that a lot of people in Terrace were pulling over and watching us walk by. We saw a lot of shopkeepers come out. We saw a lot of people who were walking stop and just kind of tip their hat to us. And just there seemed to be a lot of respect and people understanding what we were doing. So that was really, really nice to see. As you know, in today's world, you don't see that a whole lot. To get that respect from the city was really, really nice.
Now, if you can share with us some of the, you know, sad, unfortunate truth, again, especially along the Highway of Tears.
Well, Indigenous women are disproportionately affected by this crisis. It's all in the statistics. We recently were in Ottawa to speak on the Red Dress Alert that the federal government is trying to implement. And we talked about the Red Dress Alert being similar to the Amber Alert. And what I said to them was that I can count on one hand how many times I've received an Amber Alert on my phone. I said, but I can't even count how many times I've heard of an Indigenous woman going missing. And it's the statistics are kind of ridiculous how much we are affected just because of who we are and how we were born. That's why we do what we do. My own cousin went missing in 2005 out of Prince Rupert, and she still hasn't been found. We still have no answers. And since starting this work, I've discovered that I have two more cousins, more distant cousins, that have been missing. And again, no answers.
The history of the Highway of Tears goes back into the 70s for sure.
Definitely. It was the 70s.
It is still very current and still affects us today.
Oh, absolutely.
Is there anything else that you'd like to share or add with us at all today?
I get a lot of questions from non-Indigenous people who ask, what can I do? First of all, the fact that they're even asking what they can do is the first step in becoming an ally. The second thing you can do is participate. Whenever you see these marches to commemorate missing and murdered loved ones, take part. It's not just an Indigenous issue. Non-Indigenous people go missing all the time as well. As well, so many people who are non-Indigenous have Indigenous friends who have gone missing or been murdered. So the important thing is definitely to take part, and this Sunday is a great time to do that.
This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
This is Bird Note. In shallow waters off the coast of Massachusetts, ocean predators come from far and wide to hunt. Humpback whales break the surface as they close their jaws around a school of fish. And thousands of seabirds dive in the water or skim the surface for easy prey. Great shearwaters glide with their wings held out stiffly just over the waves until they spot their shimmering targets. These top predators are all here thanks to tiny fish called sand lance. They bury themselves in the sand at night for protection, emerging during the day to feed in huge numbers. That's when shearwaters dive for them and humpback whales gulp them down. But sand lance are vulnerable to climate change. They have their offspring in the winter, so rising temperatures could make it harder for their young to develop successfully. That puts the rest of the ecosystem, including seabirds, at risk. Biologists are exploring the link between shearwaters and their tiny prey by tracking the birds' movements around Stellwagen Bank National Marine Sanctuary. Learn more on our website, bird.org. I'm Ariana Rimmel. This episode is dedicated to Bob Goodale, whose lifelong love for birds and nature continues to inspire.
My name's Jimmy Morgan. I am a Lachiap guardian for the Gitignau Hereditary Chiefs and the Gitignau Lachiap Guardians program. I've been in fisheries and wildlife for about 16 years, and I'm also a facilitator for Nature United's technical support team for guardians.
We're sitting here at the Prestige. Can you tell me what the conference has been about and what's been going on these past 2 days?
We have gathered here in the Prestige to discuss bear-human conflicts within the SAF region, which is Environmental Stewardship Initiative's technical. So we've realized there's bear-human conflicts every single year. There's always huge issues, and they vary in different communities. But we have an opportunity to work together as a SAF group. We're trying to develop bear coordinators for communities within the SAF region. And the idea of that is to have a bear coordinator that would be the middleman or middle woman between community and the COs, so that if there's some bear issues, there's a one person that contacts the COs. It doesn't matter if somebody else calls, but it's better than 20 calls for the same bear. The idea was to have a community member that's really keen and knowledgeable about which bears are around, and they'll know that, oh, that bear is not really a problem bear. He always walks by here every day. So we don't really have to call that one in. That's the whole idea of that, is just to fill some gaps, meaning where COs need support to handle some certain situations, where there's a Northern Lights animal shelter here that does so much work, and that's not just bears. They have so much work on their hands. And we see that as a gap that guardians can start filling, which is to become professional enough to handle situations such as getting rid of maybe some, trapping out some problem bears in the future. Like right now, we're not there yet, but we're just sitting down and discussing what would be some best managed practices that we can follow moving forward and start supporting each other. So the main idea was to get the right people in the right room and start coming up with a plan on how do we actually mitigate this problem. A little bit more than bear awareness workshops, which is super important, and it's very needed. But we needed to have all the right people in the right room to start saying, this is where we're at, and this is how we're going to move forward to get rid of this or start mitigating this problem. And it's not the same issue in every community. We're aware of that too. Right now, we're just going to agree on best managed practices moving forward. Like we, for example, composting. Definitely, we all agree that it's probably a good best managed practice. But individually in each community, it might look different.
Is there currently an informal guardianship program where people who do have a lot of bear knowledge, are acting as that go-between or are helping currently in communities? Or is this something completely new that the Gitinyao saw somewhere else?
I'm glad you asked that question because we didn't pay in from down south. They have a guardian program that has taken it upon themselves to develop a wildlife coexistence plan and strategy. We're using that kind of as a model, and we're going to develop something that says, this is our plan moving forward. We'd love to work together with communities to get this and this done. Also, here's an example of how it's worked somewhere else. Yeah. So it is doable. There's so much to be done, and it feels daunting all the time, but there is a group that has done a lot, and their plan was to even trap out some problem. But along the way, they realized they haven't had to use their bear trap since they started doing this because of all the best managed practices, the stinky stuff going in the right places, attractants managing them and mitigating. And the bigger the community, seems like it's harder to do that.
Like, you need to have more buy-in from the people?
Yeah. Kitisuhehe has about 300-400 people, maybe 5 at the most, but they still had to get the buy-in from them. And it's really amazing that they can do so much out there because they rely on their bears too for tourism. Okay. So they have a lot of respect for their bears, and they know that it's their territory too. So one thing that they've done was pretty neat is develop signage that shows that this is a shared area between humans and bears. You don't always have to call in these bears unless they're an issue in that spot.
Yeah.
So in the map, that spot's like green. And then a red spot would be like, we don't really want bears here. So if you see a bear here, you can call it in. And little things like that we can agree on. Yeah. And then individually, communities can adjust their programs accordingly to their communities. But right now, as a starting point, we're just really happy to have the right people in the right room and start agreeing on what are these best managed practices that we can feasibly follow and stay safe and professional.
Yeah. You mentioned as well that maybe part of the problem mitigating is an overwhelming amount of calls for bears that aren't a problem, which is one, right? But is it also, is part of this program, the point of it to also not capture or kill bears unnecessarily, maybe overreact when they see bears?
Yeah, 100%. I think we're definitely, that's part of the best managed practices that we're sitting down with. We're definitely not going to be calling any bears. That's not one. That's not a best managed practice that, yeah. Basically, we don't ever want to shoot first. That never happens, even in the COs and stuff like that. It's this happens first. There's some mitigation issues. Remove the attractant. And if they keep coming back, then they're a problem bear. The idea is to enhance habitat around the communities so that they have berries all the time outside of the communities. And yeah, so that's the tricky part with having a big group. Kitisuhehe was their own community deciding on how to do things. What we have here is like 9 different nations. So we're not trying to develop those individual ideas and stuff for the communities. What we're trying to do here is develop an agreement of how we're going to move forward safely and mitigate some issues that COs have. Basically, we're finding the gaps and finding out how are we going to fill them, using guardians and or bear coordinators moving forward. Right now, this is a human issue. It's not a territorial issue. And that means we have to speak with communal organizations such as the band office, who is in charge of community and in charge of anything that goes on inside that community. Most of us that have guardians and such are the hereditary chief systems. And so we're developing some inform the band offices of our intentions, our plans moving forward, and how we can support each other. So that's the reason to come here, is because we're more concentrated on the community and how do we support communities and people that are doing the good stuff within those communities.
Okay, so after this conference, what are the next steps and how do you envision this moving forward to success?
That's what we came here to discuss. We need to inform the communities within the SAF region of our intentions. Also showing them who's backing us to do this, where they can step in to back us and support. And also, as a result of this, how much support they're going to get within the community through the Guardian program. Also, let's sit down and discuss what's needed. We're not going to go in and say, this is what we're doing. Yeah. This is what you need. Right now, we're going to invite the band offices to just sit with us and just start talking about what we're talking about and see what the potentials are overall.
Awesome. Thank you so much for taking the time to speak with me today.
Well, thank you.
I'm Dr. Anthony Lizerwitz, and this is Climate Connections. In the grasslands of sub-Saharan Africa, few animals are as instantly recognizable as the rhinoceros. But both black and white rhinos have been under intense pressure from poaching and habitat loss, which have pushed these species close to extinction. And a new study warns that rhinos now face another threat, climate change. National parks like Kruger in South Africa and Etosha in Namibia, home to some of the last rhinos in Africa, are expected to get hotter in coming decades. Researchers at the University of Massachusetts say that could be deadly for the animals. Rhinos don't sweat, so they rely on shade and muddy wallowing pools to stay cool.
Rhinos need really unique conditions.
Timothy Randier is one of the study's authors. He says in addition to addressing poaching and habitat loss, wildlife managers need to take steps to protect rhinos from the heat.
That has to be also a part of rhino restoration and rhino conservation.
He says wildlife managers can help keep rhinos cool by providing extra shade and wallowing areas, so the parks can provide a safe haven for these horned giants as the climate warms. Climate Connections is produced by the Yale Center for Environmental Communication. To learn more about climate change, visit climateconnections.org.
It started out as inquiry, but simply put, I no longer needed to know. But this presented a problem. How do I stop you from knowing? How do I stop you from seeing the reality? But then it hit me. What if I make reality? What if I make the reality that is what you want to see? A reality that plays to your fear. A reality that fills your deepest, darkest, apocalyptic fantasies. You might make sanity, but I make that irrelevant. And for you, I have but one question.
Your face next time we meet. But face to face is where it stops. Never preach on the phone, cause I think it's a cop. Fill the world and hit the stage. A glass fist can't crush you with rage. Just let you think that you've gotten something. To find a way to weaponize nothing. Like nothing done at the time of decision. Nothing's evil as God's mission. Nothing's ever than when a mic's dropped. Won't admit it to yourself cause you're in a cop. We'll be right back.
song, sing, sing, song. Across the plains, prairie dusk does
Daniel, I play guitar and sing in Dead Soft.
Since moving to BC, I've been a huge fan of Emily Carr's art.
I wrote a lot of it on the road. That was our first real tour.
What role do you think time plays in transforming something into art?
We've arrived at sexual maturity as a band.
The Arts Show, every Thursday from 5 to 6 p.m. right here on CJSF 90.1 FM.